Hi, this is Chip Ingram with Living on the Edge, and I want you to know that God taught me something a number of years ago that literally took my spiritual life to the next level. I mean, quite honestly, I was a pastor, I was stuck, there were certain things that I just didn't see change. And then I was introduced to a concept. It was a concept called spiritual training. It revolutionized my life, and that's what I want to share with you today.
Thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge with Chip Ingram. Living on the Edge is an international discipleship ministry focused on helping Christians live like Christians through the daily teaching of Chip Ingram. I'm Dave Gruey, and we're in the middle of Chip's series, Yes, You Really Can Change. The idea of training, he alluded to a second ago, brings to mind the world of sports. In order to be successful, athletes go through rigorous preparation for every competition. How does that relate to our current series? Chip's about to tell us. Open your Bible, if you have one, to Ephesians chapter 4, and let's join him now for his message, The Role of Spiritual Training in the Transformation Process.
Despite some of the radical transformation that happens early on in most people's Christian lives, there's these nagging areas. There's areas that you try and try and try and try and try, but they don't change. Some of the outer big stuff sometimes gets cleaned up, but you know, those outbursts of anger or the workaholism or pleasing people or codependency, or there's just people that, you know what, you just find yourself, you really love God, you're sincere, you're actually reading your Bible, you're praying, you've joined a small group, but there are just pockets or closets in your life that you want to change and you have tried very hard and you're stuck. And what I want you to know is that we all have areas like that. And the reason this is so important is because how we think about that and how God actually works to transform those things is different. And most people don't understand how that works. In fact, I would say probably the first 10 years I was a Christian, I made some progress in some of those areas almost by random chance, but I couldn't articulate what happened or why. Until I had a situation with one of my sons. My youngest son, Ryan, he gave me permission, and this bench is going to tell a story. I can still remember sitting on the floor, and my son had what an older translation says is a besetting sin. I mean, he was a young guy, loved God. I mean, at 10, 11 years old, he's getting up, reading the Bible. He's leading worship by the time he's in junior high. Although he doesn't like school and he's not very disciplined, he's this young guy with a great heart, but this besetting sin is every little kid goes through a season of lying, at least my four did, but they usually grow out of it. But Ryan, this shortcut, this besetting sin was whether his homework was due or he was supposed to do that, he got into a pattern. He got into a habit of lying. In fact, for like 4 years, and he was really good. I mean, he would lie so much that he actually would tell me later, Dad, I lied about everything so much, I became convinced of my own lies. And then I would ask him, so is your homework done? Oh, yeah, I got it taken care of. And then, you know, his report card would come, or have you talked to so-and-so? I mean, perpetual besetting. I mean, I disciplined him. I rewarded him. I grounded him. If you're a parent and you've ever had one of these things, you know, I did everything you can do as a parent. And I mean, I was just frustrated. And it put a real breach in our relationship because then I never knew if I could trust him. And in one of just, I know, like 3 years of this, and I've done everything I can do, I'm literally sitting on the floor, he's sitting on his bed, and a breakthrough came because as I'm sitting on the floor and literally tears coming down my eyes and tears coming, Ryan, I mean, you just keep lying and lying and lying. And I remember him looking down at me and says, Dad, I'm trying as hard as I can. What do you do? I've prayed. I've memorized a couple verses. I've asked God. I can't stop. What do you do when you try as hard as you can and you just can't change? And I remember in that moment, I thought to myself, number one, I'm his dad, and he wants a really good answer from his dad. And number two, I'm a pastor, so I should have a good answer. And I'm thinking, I don't. What do you do when you're trying as hard as you can and you really love God and you're doing what you know to do, you're in the scriptures, you're renewing your mind, but certain things won't change? And as he said that, and I'm feeling this overwhelming inadequacy as a father and as a pastor to give a good response, I'm praying one of the like super quick prayers in your mind, oh God, give me wisdom, give me wisdom, give me wisdom. And he's crying and bawling and he's kind of looking at me like, well, Dad? And God brought something to my mind. I'd been studying it privately, but all the pieces came together in that moment. I said, Ryan, relax. What? I said, relax. I've got the answer. You do? I said, yeah, got the answer. Here's what I want you to do. I'll pick you up after school tomorrow. Load your gym bag. I want you to put a pair of sweats, your tennis shoes, everything in the gym bag. I'll pick you up. Because what I had to teach my son was there are certain things that no amount of trying harder, as sincere you can be, will bring about change. Certain things are going to require training. And so I picked him up after school, and we started in the car. He goes, Dad, we're not heading home. I said, no, we're going to go someplace different. At the time, I had a good friend. He was Mr. Universe for a number of years called, his name's Dave Draper, and he owned World Gym there in Santa Cruz, and he gave me a free membership. And so we walk into World Gym, and hi, Dave, how you doing? And Dave's like, Dave, well, this, now, please hear, this is a gym, not a spa. There is no spandex anywhere. In fact, there are guys with big leather belts like this, and there's not a lot of machines, and there's just a few cardio areas. This is like free weights, big guys, lots of grunting, probably a few steroids in the back room. And I mean, then they drop the weights, and it goes boom, 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 boom. And these guys look like they were born on these weight machines. And so I walked in. I said, what do you think, Ryan? They're really big. And you know, naively, I said, do you think they were born that way? No, Dad. I said, I don't either. Well, come here, son. So we'd been lifting in the garage with his older brothers. I had him lay down on the bench press. We got warmed up, and I knew what he could lift. And so I took about 5 to 7 pounds on each end beyond what he could lift. So I knew he could hold it, but he couldn't lift it. And so I said, get down, son, will you? And so he gets down. I said, okay, you ready? Let's do a few reps of this. Okay, and okay, here you go. Okay, you ready, son? Okay, okay. Press, 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 press. Okay, ready? Let it down. Okay, okay, now press it up. And if you've ever done a little weightlifting, and if you know it's just, you know when you start to shake? So he's shaking. And now it's coming down closer and closer to his neck. Closer and closer to his neck. His mother would not be pleased at this moment. And so as he's laying down there and his face is red and it's coming close to his neck, I get over him. And, you know, I've got my hands in case, you know, I don't want it to hit his neck. And I start screaming, come on, Ryan, try harder, try harder, try harder. And finally, it's like inches from his neck and his arms are shaking. He goes, Dad, I'm trying as hard as I can. I lifted it off. I said, never forget that, son. Then we sat there together and he was like overwhelmed and sweaty. I said, Ryan, let me ask you something. You see all these guys, how do you think they got the way they got? Well, I think they come here a lot. I think you're right. I said, well, let me ask you, if I would take maybe 10 pounds off each end and you did 3 sets of 8 or 10 today, and it was a Monday, we come back Wednesday, you do 3 sets of 8 or 10. We come back Friday, you do 3 sets of 8 or 10. Then next week we come back and you do 3 sets of 8 or 10, and maybe we add a pound or two, do you think in 3 months you could lift that extra 5 or 7 pounds on each end? Oh, yeah, Dad, I'm sure I could do that. That's no problem. You know, my older brother, Jason, he could only lift about 130 or 40 pounds, and he does almost 300 now. He was a wrestler. I said, Ryan, listen carefully. You have everything in your body to lift that weight. But no amount of trying hard will lift that weight right now. You have to go into training. You have to develop what God has given you. And here's what I want you to know. Some of your anger issues, some of your addiction issues, some of your people-pleasing issues, some of your alcohol and prescription drug issues, some of your workaholism issues, some of the issues that we all have that we all kind of keep over here and you're stuck and you really haven't seen change, I want you to understand no amount of trying harder. And we're going to go into training. We're going to talk about 5 habits that cultivate holiness from the heart. See, there's certain things that when you go into training, they literally become habits. You have spiritual, supernatural responses to certain things that right now our besetting sins. There's a study done by Duke University. Did you realize 40% of all your behavior you don't think about? It's called a habit. I mean, think about, I mean, like, how many of you really thought through very specifically how to brush your teeth this morning? You've got it down. I mean, it wasn't like you got up, I think you pull the brush out, this angle, carefully take the tube off. Okay, now I got to work. See, I want just enough here. Put the water on lightly to sprinkle under it. Begin with the molars up and down, 45-degree angle. Does anybody think about any of that stuff? Now, when you teach your 2 or 3-year-old to brush your teeth, you do all that. Habits, the power of habit. Research tells us that every habit has a cue or a craving. There's a routine and there's a reward. Your besetting sin has become a habit in your life. It's just like when God wanted to do an amazing, miraculous thing with the children of Israel, certain things, he has this big deliverances, so you see his power, and then there's a process and a journey where your character gets developed, but there's sort of a grinding it out and doing things over time that become a habit. So when God takes the children of Israel, what happens? What's he do? The miracle, the Jordan parts, Jericho, dramatic, falls supernaturally, and then for decades, what do? For decades, they get up and they go into training and they do battle, and inch by inch, they take more and more territory. And that's a good picture of sanctification, what happens in our lives. And so I'm going to help you begin to break some of those habits that you don't even think about, begin to analyze what's really going on. And as you do these, they're very critical. First and foremost, here's training station number one. The bench press of spirituality is this. It's be honest. Speak the truth in love. Paul picks up where he had talked about in verse 15, where he says, speaking the truth in love, we're to grow up into all aspects into him who is the head, even Christ. Therefore, verse 25 then, he's going to make the application. Laying aside falsehood, speak the truth, each one of you with his neighbor, for we are members of one another. Spiritual training station number one is honesty. Personal integrity. This isn't just your speech, but all aspects, honesty, integrity, how you live, what you say, but especially, you're going to put off falsehood. Your training command is to speak the truth in love. Speaking the truth, but doing it in love. Not speaking the truth to hurt people. Speaking the truth to build relationships. The training action is you put off falsehood. And this word falsehood is well beyond. This isn't just lying. The word falsehood has the idea of speech, deceit, exaggeration, the falsehood that comes from white lies, the falsehood of silence. Aren't there times where someone's saying something and you completely disagree, but in your silence, you communicate that you agree with them? It says, put off falsehood. Then notice the renewal is you recognize your shared membership in God's family. Put off falsehood, but notice the difference in thinking. With your neighbor, for we are members of one another. See, at the end of the day, the reason why Ryan lied to me, because it always produced short-term relief and then long-term consequences. I didn't do my homework, but I lie about it, so I'm not in trouble right now. But the one thing that it did in our relationship is what? It violated trust. The commodity of every human relationship, whether it's parent to child, whether it's your marriage partner, whether it's a friend, whether it's a roommate, whether it's a business, the commodity of every relationship is trust. Once trust is gone, you have no relationship. Once you lie to me a few times, one, I will not trust what you say in the future, and number two, I will not vulnerably reveal anything about my life, because what I know is you can't be trusted. When you lie, when your life is falsehood, either by your speech or your actions, you can't be trusted. Relationships can't grow. The Apostle Paul is using the human body, and he says, just as we're members of one another in the body of Christ, I mean, think about if your hand and your eye and your foot begin to lie to your brain. If something was hot and your hand got on something hot and it told your brain it was cold, what's going to happen? Pain. And he's saying to you, you have to rethink You are thinking only about yourself when you lie, when you have less than the truth in relationships, when you exaggerate, when there are these little white lies. What you're doing is you're avoiding some front-term pain, but what you're doing is you're eroding trust. And little lies in marriage end up, over the years, big lies. And when your words say one thing and your behavior says something to your kids, they say, I don't not only believe in you, but I don't believe in your faith. At a certain time, remember, you have to make a decision. Delete. Then you have to run a new program. And the new program is, I'm going to be honest in everything all the time. And then you have to go into training to become an honest person. Now, some of you are thinking, well, I'm an honest person. I don't like do any big lies, and I've actually reported everything on my taxes. And let me probe a little bit on some of the exaggeration and some of the white lies and some of the small ways. Because Luke 16:10, you might jot that in your notes. It's a financial passage, but it's a timeless principle. It says, he who is faithful in a very little thing will be faithful also in much. But he who is unrighteous in a very little thing will be unrighteous also in much. How many times have you left late for something and there's a little bit of traffic and you walk into work or to someone and you say, oh, well, the traffic was really heavy. Well, the traffic was really heavy, but you're late not because the traffic's heavy. You're late because you left 15 minutes late. Well, that's just a little lie. Or how many of us exaggerate? We just exaggerate in a little bit here and a little bit there. Little lies, little exaggerations. What I can tell you is we have all grown accustomed to doing that at such a level, we just give one another a pass. Truth. Integrity. See, what we then do is then we lie to ourselves. You know, I don't really have a drinking problem. I don't really please people that much. I don't think I'm a workaholic. I just have a lot of energy. You know, I don't think our marriage really is in trouble. I think she's just going through a season where she needs more attention. Lie, lie, lie. When you don't ruthlessly say, I'm going to go into training to be honest with God, honest with myself, and honest with others 100% of the time. When you do that, I will tell you, it will bring about transformation in those besetting sins. I was early married, and I happened to marry someone, not all positive, and she would say this, whose integrity is like off the charts. In fact, so literal at times that she kind of misses the point. And I'm sort of one of those big picture people, and big picture people have a tendency to just sort of generalize. We don't call it lying, we call it generalizing. We call it rounding. If you've been around, no, hey, by the way, I love you, but you know, people in sales, people in leadership. So, you know, you frame things in a way that's just a little, you know. And so we were in this little church, we just started out, and so we, you know, it was like 35 people in the church, and we got all these neighborhood kids in a club, and we had them over on a midweek, and had a little midweek thing on Wednesday, and I was announcing to the church the progress of God, how encouraging it was, and said we had like 62 kids last week, and, you know, or something like that, and I get in the car, and my wife's real quiet. I said, what's wrong? Why did you lie today? What do you mean, lie? Well, you said there were like 62 or 69 kids, and they were like 50-some. I said, I rounded. I said, well, how do you round from like 58 to 62? I said, up. And what I found was in little numbers and in little ways, or, you know, I'm going to be about 5 minutes late and it's 15 minutes late, or this is what happened. I found that I exaggerated. Well, I mean, you know, I'm a young pastor and I'm just starting out. Like every week for the first 6 or 8 or 10 weeks, I mean, she's real quiet. I mean, in every message, there was something where, and she would, why did you lie? And I'm just thinking, is this going to be the rest of my life? And then God says, well, probably if you keep, why do you have to exaggerate? Why do you have to try and make me look better? Or is it really about making you look better? What would happen if you were ruthlessly honest in every area of your life? How many times has someone said something to you and, hey, we really ought to get together and this is a great idea, I think you'd love to do it, and you say something like, yeah, let's really get together sometime, and yeah, I think that's a winner, and down deep, the moment they walk out of the room, you're thinking, man, I would never do that, and I don't want to take that person's phone call in the future. But what you did is you did a little covering and you acted like you were interested because it would take a lot more courage to say, you know, that's an interesting idea. I don't really think that is for me. And I'm not really interested at this point in time with my other priorities of being involved in that. And so we lie all the time. We say things we don't mean. We present ourselves as better than we are. That's falsehood. But when you do that, I want you to know it's a disease and it grows. And deception happens in your own heart. And then pretty soon you don't see yourself the way you really are and you don't see God the way he is and things get more cloudy. And the problem with these kind of things is they grow and things that are little, 10, 12, 15 years later, they're big things. And so God says, go into training. And so you put on truthful speech and authenticity. Well, how do you do that? I mean, how do you make the break where that really occurs? In the same season, God hammered me on this, and it was really life-transforming. When I said that I learned this sort of by random, God brought some circumstances into my life where I learned this training apparatus. And the training apparatus here literally is practice confession. It was during the same time, and I was pastoring a little church, and I'm finishing up seminary, and I'm in seminary, and as I walk the halls of seminary, being the basketball-holic I am, in the halls is a 6'11 guy, and I find out he plays at West Virginia. There's a 6'8 guy from Wisconsin. There's a 6'7 guy from Illinois, and there's a 6'4, 6'5 guy from New Mexico State. They all played college basketball. We all played hoop together, so we formed a little team. It was the most formidable intramural team you've ever seen, and we had a blast. And I got a call from the head of what was called Sports Ambassadors, and I'd been overseas playing them throughout South America, and then I did one stint in the Orient. And Bud Schaefer, who's the head of it, he goes, this was when China was closed many years ago. You couldn't get in China. We have an invitation to go to China. We're going to get to play all their national teams. We're going to play in all the major provinces. And in small areas, they're going to allow us to share the gospel. Chip, I'm looking for two guards. Are you in shape? Yes! Well, how many points? I'm playing in the league right now. Oh, yeah. And well, how many points? Oh, 10 or 12 points, 6 or 8 assists, you know, probably 3 or 4 steals. Well, that's great. Well, I'll get back to you. And I hung up the phone. And the peace of God just dissipated. It was gone. See, the fact is, in that little intramural league, we didn't even have a scorekeeper. No one was keeping track of points. No one was keeping track of assists. I just rounded up. Desire, here's how habits work. The cue is, I want to get something. I want approval. I want this. The routine is, I exaggerate, white lie, present myself falsely. The reward is, I get it occasionally. It's a habit. So I said, oh, Lord, I'm sorry. Because I'm in seminary now. I'm preparing to teach God's word to people, the truth. That's ironic, isn't it? I'm preparing to teach the truth as I lie to this guy about getting on a ministry team to go teach the truth. Weird, huh? Well, look in the mirror and it won't be quite so weird. And so there's no peace. And so it's, okay. Well, I know the verse, confess your sins and he'll forgive me. So I confess my sins. Lord, please forgive me and I hope I get on the team. 2 days later, still, I mean, I can't pray effectively, and I have this guilt, there's still no peace. And God whispers, I want you to call Bud Schaefer, own your stuff, confess your sin, and apologize. Oh, Lord, surely you jest. I mean, I'm in seminary. Do you realize how embarrassing it is for a seminary student to say he lied about a ministry opportunity? And like, this is the organization, and I've done things with them before, and I want them to think well of me. And I'll never forget the phone call. I called, I said, Bud, this is Chip. And I want you to know those statistics I gave, they don't really keep statistics, so I made those up. And I lied to you, and I'm guessing you probably don't want someone on your team that lies as a representative to share Christ in China. And so he was a great leader. He didn't gloss it. Chip, thanks so much for your integrity and coming clean. You're exactly right. We really don't want players that habitually don't tell the truth. But I think this is a great step. We'll be looking for a couple other guards. You know what I did? I went into training. And I made a vow before God that when I lied, when God made it aware that I lied in little things or in big things to my wife, to another person, in a sermon, I would confess it and actually go to whoever I lied to and tell them. Now, I'd like to say that, you know, that was like 25, 30 years ago. I can tell you I've had to do that in the last 2 weeks because I'm in training and you're in training. But I will tell you what, by and large, I broke the power of deceit in my heart and I broke the power of lying because for 30 years I've been in training to be honest about exaggerating and white lies and presenting myself.
Chip will join us here in studio with his application in just a minute. You've been listening to the first part of his message, The Role of Spiritual Training in the Transformation Process, from his series, Yes, You Really Can Change. The point of this series is not only to say that genuine life change is possible, but to help us reflect on areas where we struggle. Maybe you need to break an addiction, repair a broken relationship, or correct a behavior. Whatever the issue is, you can make the change, and we'd love to help you with that process. Digging deeper into this series would be a great way to start. Take a look at the study guide, stream the small group video, or download the free MP3s to listen anytime. To place your order or for more details on Yes, You Really Can Change, go to livingontheedge.org, call 888-333-6003, or tap Special Offers on the Chip Ingram app. Chip, as we listen to this series, I think we all recognize that there are serious issues people struggle with, like addiction, depression, and abuse, but there are others who are kind of coasting along in quiet desperation. They might even be reading their Bible and going to church every once in a while, but they just aren't experiencing the power and the joy you're talking about. What would you say to them?
Well, Dave, that's an insightful question because I think you're right. There's certainly people that are going through really deep addictions, and this series is going to be super helpful for them. But what I can tell you is there are a multitude of Christians who aren't involved in any, quote, blatant sin, but are not experiencing this supernatural life we're talking about. And I think for many, they've believed unconsciously that certain religious activity will bring about change. We all can have idols in our life, roadblocks in our life that we're completely oblivious to. And so that's why the Apostle Paul is so clear in Ephesians chapter 4 of this taking off, this renewing of our mind, and this putting on. And that's why these last messages are so important. I've seen people begin to specifically go into training, and I've outlined that in this teaching series, but I put it in the book in such a way where there's a roadmap, a very specific way for them to learn to go into training, to renew their mind in a way that allows them to experience that joy and that peace and that power that God longs for them to experience because He would say, I'm your father, you're my daughter, you're my son. And so I would encourage people, especially if what you're listening to is resonating, get the book, do it with someone, and see if as you dig in personally, God won't speak to you in a powerful way.
That's a great idea. Thanks. Well, we're pretty excited about the release of the new revised edition of Chip's book, Yes, You Really Can Change. Let me encourage you, go to our website, livingontheedge.org, to pick up your copy of Yes, You Really Can Change. Pick one up for yourself, maybe get one for a friend, and spend some time over coffee encouraging one another on your new journey of life change. Well, now here's Chip with a final thought.
As you ponder today about where and how you need to go into spiritual training in the area of honesty, let me take just a minute and share a little story about how God put me into training long before I knew what it was. Very first pastorate, it was a very small church, wonderful group of people in rural Texas, and it was my very first pastorate. I'm 28 years old, and you know, the first 2 or 3 weeks, I'm preaching my first messages, and then the church starts to grow a little bit, and we start a little Wednesday night group, and so I say in my sermon, you know, last Wednesday was really great. We had about 68 or 70 people, and you know, we go on with the message, and I'm in the car on the way home, and I mean, my wife is like strangely silent. And we drive a little while, and I say, you know, like you would say, well, hey, honey, something wrong? Well, yeah, what's wrong? Why did you lie today? I said, what? Why'd you lie today? What do you mean, why did I lie today? I thought it was a pretty good message, actually. And
hey, I watched you count on Wednesday night. There was like 64 people. I said, well, I was just rounding. And she said, well, how do you round from 64 to 68 to 70? I said, well, what's it matter? And she said, isn't that the point? What does it matter? And I thought, oh, brother, you know, I'm thinking she's very detail-oriented. I'm a big-picture guy. It's a small misunderstanding, and she just doesn't get it. But, okay, you're right. You know, I exaggerate a little bit. No, you lied. Okay, so I'm thinking, over, forget it. I'm sorry, I didn't really mean it, but I'm not going to go there. Next week, I tell another story. I use a figure again. I've got icicles coming home in the car in round two, and I'm thinking, you know, this pastorate may not be very fun if this happens every week. And I said, what's wrong? And she looked at me with that same look. She goes, why did you lie again this week? And I went, oh, no, this is like a royal headache that's not going to go away. I said, what do you mean? And I exaggerated again, and I thought, this is going to be a long journey being a pastor. And what happened was I realized down deep that I like to exaggerate because somehow out of my own insecurities, even though it didn't mean anything, I wanted to make myself look better than I really am. And when you're unfaithful in a very little thing, then you're going to be unfaithful in much. And God used my wife, and I went into training. Now, I didn't go into training because I was smart or spiritual. I went into training because you can only take so many of those drives home with your wife saying, why did you lie? And you're the pastor. And, you know, I went into training to down to the littlest parts of my speech to tell the truth. And I'm not going to tell you that overnight everything happened. It's like lifting weights when I talked about with my son. But I mean week after week, week after week, and she learned to actually say it a little bit nicer. And I went into this training about being honest, and I don't have it licked. But I want you to know that integrity has been a foundational issue in my life after that first pastorate in those early years because I went into training to be honest down to the little things. Let me ask you, what would it look like today for you to go into training in the area of honesty? Okay? Have you got it? Is it white lies? Is it exaggeration? Or is it just plain falsehood? Have your mind renewed, remember? We're members of one another, and put on honesty that your life would reflect the very purity and truthfulness of Christ.
Thanks, Chip. Let me take just a second and thank the generous people who make monthly donations to support the ministry of Living on the Edge. Your faithful gifts help us inspire Christians to live like Christians. Every gift makes a huge difference. If you haven't partnered with us yet, would you prayerfully consider joining the Living on the Edge team? Make a one-time gift or set up a recurring donation by going to livingontheedge.org or calling us at 888-333-6003. And know we're blessed by whatever the Lord leads you to do. Well, until next time, this is Dave Drewy saying thanks for listening to this edition of Living on the Edge.